WQM AM Toronto is TSN 1050, an iHeart radio station and the voice of Toronto sports. This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hazy, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, our buddy Josh Lewenberg later in the hour on this Pascal Siakam article in the New York Times. We'll read you off some of the quotes and I think what will be some of the reaction throughout town, and tell you a little bit about what Brendan Shanahan had to say today with Steve Simmons. That'll be in, I'm assuming, tomorrow's Sun, but it's up online today. We're getting some conflicting information on the golf ruling in O's big match earlier today, where a gentleman of esteem, character, integrity, he's claiming you're on the wrong side of this ruling, buddy, that you don't get relief. Our boy Donnie, who's coming in hot.
That guy is a fraud. And if I ever played with your boy Donnie and I ever, like, I was 5 feet behind an electrical box and I'm like, I got to hit a punch shot, like, then that thing is right in my line of sight. And he said, you don't get relief. I would, once again, Hayes, cart home. I don't want to play with that guy. And I know Donnie boy wouldn't do that, our boy.
I don't think he would, but in the back of his mind, he would probably know what's up. And it's all good.
You,
I mean, it's,
you mentioned Tux in that ruling. I can just see the steam coming out of that guy's ears when those other people were saying you don't get that relief.
Well, no one knew what the ruling was.
I know, but you know how he gets. He was probably bent out of shape.
Well, and it wasn't. It went south on the hole for him, too, because he wanted relief out of the hazard, but he couldn't get it, so he had the ball, so he had to try to get it out. It took him like two or three whacks to get out, and then it was a skull over the green. Like, it was it was like a Happy Gilmore scene, kind of, and yeah, it didn't. And then afterwards, we found out he was right, which everyone just put their head down. They're like, "Okay, well, let's tee off and just continue to kind of roll here." I had a moment of maturity upstairs. I'm 38. You would think this would happen often. It doesn't. My wife, she's got the slow cooker going, like a beef stew. It's just like beef potatoes.
It.
Spectacular.
Carrots. Oh, I love it.
I walked in there. I was this close to pulling the fork out, going for it, and I said two things. One, I'm going to burn my mouth off.
For sure.
Like, you can't do – I've done it before, so I know from my experience. Burn my mouth off. Secondly, when I'm burning my mouth off, I'm going to spill, like, gravy or sauce or whatever all over my white shirt.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm mature now. I'm 38. And it finally dawned on me. I'm like, that's a smart play. Like, 6 months ago, I think I would have fired that thing up. And I don't know, maybe I'm a changed man now. 38.
I don't think so. You probably
what I will say is you probably pulled a big hunk of beef out of it, put it on a plate to cool down, and you're going to bring it down in five
that's
minutes.
That's what I was just saying. I was just going to say the exact same thing. Like, you're not mature. You're not. You haven't grown.
You're an idiot.
What you did is you found a workaround. You're like, oh, I got to be back on air in 60 seconds.
Right.
You grab the plate, you put it on there, and it's sitting beside you right now, cooling off.
I found a loophole.
You hung a left, a hard left-hand turn, and you got into our favorite little biscuits with the peanut butter in the middle. That's exactly what you did.
Yeah. You know what I'm on now, too, is the coconut ones you sent me. I have been hunting those down throughout the GTA. I bury one or two of those a day.
Dude, I can't. I've hit rock bottom. I got on a scale a month ago, and I saw some numbers. And I like anything else in life, you kind of got to hit rock bottom before you. And I've in the past said, oh, I'm working out. But I hit the rock. And when you're putting the squeeze on a 2XL and you might have to venture up to the three piece. Dude.
Triple X?
Dude.
Stop it.
I was putting a squeeze on a 2X. I
you
was putting
a tire iron to get into a 2X.
No, but I would like walk by. There's a giant mirror in my hallway, and I would walk by with a 2X t-shirt on, and I'm seeing a flex on the front of it, and I'm like, this is an absolute joke. That's when I called the trainer, and I said, bud, we're back. Like, it was like a Rocky moment. I started playing.
Dude, how many
music
times have I told you though? The training is 10% of it. Like, it's 90% is eating. It's eating. It's you have to eat properly. I know.
Dude, don't try to be a you know what. I know that. I'm doing it all.
Okay, good. Oh, I know. I'm supporting that. Well, I'm saying the training is great on top of it all. I wish I was training. I don't train. I don't do anything. I'm completely inactive. It's pathetic.
But let me ask you this. So what was adding to your, I guess, your appetite? You had little treats? Like I have certain things.
Treats don't do it, Noodles.
No. Here it was for me, dude. Here's what happened. A year and a half ago, I quit booze. Okay.
Right. I remember that.
So after booze, I would be going to Bulk Barn, and I would be coming out with Santa sacks full of jelly beans and jujubes and all this. And then COVID happened. Every night I would make this thing. Like, we have these white bowls. I would fill this thing with jujubes and jelly beans and all kinds of candy, and I was dummying one of them a night, like lying in TV watching the iPad. And I started thinking to myself, because I think a lot, and I was like, these Santa sacks I'm wheeling out of Bulk Barn are really heavy. Like, dude, you load up bags and bags of garbage in there. You come out, it's like, this feels like your hockey bag. And I'm like, if I'm dummying one of the bags a week, like, that's, you're putting all that into your body, and your boiler is absolutely flaring up.
Yeah, it's on tilt.
That is how you squeeze out of a 2X into a 3.
Yeah.
And I just said enough.
Well, there's a couple of things that I need to unpack with the little diatribe. I think a lot is a comment that I'd like to review.
Because I like to think. That's
I
what
like
you said.
To think. Yeah.
And no,
I think
you guys might not think it, but I am a thinker.
You're a thinker.
You are a thinker.
You're philosophical.
I understand that.
You're a philosopher.
You are, but okay. I think that might be on a T-shirt. I like to think.
I like to think. I like to think.
Because
but
I
Bulk
like
Barn,
to think.
Dude, Bulk Barn is like, if you want a bakery, you go to Bulk Barn. If you, you know, if you want a Halloween store, you go to Bulk Barn.
I know,
Barn.
But dude, they got options in there that aren't available if you want to go to the grocery store. You're talking little jelly tots. You remember those jelly tots?
Oh, I love jelly tots.
Dude, I was making a satchel of those. Like, just dumping in the late when they start saying hi by name in the Bulk Barn,
you got your own account, your own lineup.
Like when someone with a Bulk Barn golf shirt says, "What's up, old dog? Good to see you." You get the hell out, run for
your
life.
That way too often.
I mean,
if you're on a first name basis at Bulk Barn, you are.
What's
in
up,
trouble.
Old dog? With a Bulk Barn golf shirt, you better just gear down and get on a bike.
What do you think their level of tolerance is for people that sample the product as they're shopping?
Dude, it's supposed to be
COVID.
None.
There's new rule. You had to wear. I had to put on these plastic gloves to go in there. I'd get my gloves on. You got to turn over the scooper when you're done with it. I was in and out of there in 2.5 minutes, and I had a 35-pound bag of candy.
Well, I'm talking pre-COVID. Would you just tour the building like you owned it? Like, you hand in here, grab some caramels, grab, you know, jelly tots.
Everyone does it.
Like, you know how disgusting that, like, thinking now with our COVID thought process, right? Like, you're right. I love the Bulk Barn too, but, like, pre-COVID, you go in and you're like, I'll grab one of these toffees and grab.
Give it a
and
shot.
You're eating. You're
just
eating as you're shopping.
Right.
Like, I think they have a level of tolerance going, okay,
we talked about
Rafi
Torres yesterday, like finding his target, Rafi Torres. I was Rafi Torres in the Bulk Barn. I would find the jelly tots, and 2 minutes for charging, I would smash into the jelly tot container, and it just bag gone.
You're getting 25-game suspensions in Bulk Barn,
dude,
because you're just attacking these containers. And there's so many great options in there, I'll give you that. But you like Bulk Barn is not something I never thought of going there like as a frequent buyer or frequent visitor to the Bulk Barn. So you're saying you put that behind you now? The Bulk Barn is no more, or do you still kind of take a peek over at the Bulk Barn? Do you sniff around at the Bulk Barn, or?
Dude, I am not allowed. Like I gotta. It's like a guy that goes to the peel too much. Like I gotta cover my eyeball when I drive by it, and I just don't even look. I'm not going in there.
You gotta ban yourself. I've told you about my buddy who banned himself from the casino in Halifax, And then just kept going back because they didn't care.
It's tough.
He banned himself, and they're like, oh, you're banned? Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Come on in. Where's your money? They don't care.
You go through phases where you're like, okay, I'm enjoying this, But, like, you know, I found, like, there's that grocery store, Pusateri's. They have these pinwheels, which is, like, they're peanut butter and jelly, like, wrapped in bread. Like, they're like a little sandwich, tiny little sandwich. I can one time those like nothing. Eat a whole packet of them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you get
and
excited
it adds up,
about
right? It's a one-off or whatever, but if you're doing that on a daily basis, okay,
that's the thing. You get yourself in some trouble.
A lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. Okay, we've established a lot. I've matured.
Yes.
The bulk burn is no more. We're fine. We're moving in the right direction. All right? Josh Lewenberg later in the hour. So Shanahan was speaking with Simmons, and I read the article before we came on the air. I just saw it posted on air. He had a couple of interesting things to say. He's going to the wall for Marner, which is going to be – everyone in the organization is going to do that between now and opening night. Everyone. Keefe will say it day one.
Yeah.
Dubas will say it when he speaks. Shanahan said it today. And they're making the case for, you know, he's a local guy, loves being a Leaf, great player. All of these are true. They're all true. And they're invested in Marner, right?
Absolutely.
Like Shanahan was here when they drafted him, developed him, brought him up, signed him, contract negotiation, everything. So they're all connected. They're all going to the wall for him. You would expect that. I don't have any issue with that. Of course, they should try to protect their guy. It also speaks to the fact that they know what's being said out there. They know the way a lot of people are feeling and the fact that Marner is a bit of a whipping boy at this point. Justified or otherwise, it's just the truth. But he makes a good point also in the article about the source of feedback right now. And this is really more about society in general because of the pandemic. There's no one-on-one interaction anymore. There's no connection. There's no – it's almost exclusively online, and it's impossible to filter, and it can be very jaded, you know.
Yes.
And that's what it is. People are angry online. People are fake tough guys online and trolls online. And you know, that's what they're dealing with. And I think what Shanahan is trying to suggest is there still are a lot of people that support the team, love the team, that believe in the team. So they've got to be motivated to go out there and
there wasn't a lot of opportunity for the fans to go down there and cheer for the team.
Exactly.
And if it was a tough loss, you could shake your fists in the air and say, damn it, they lost it, and go and have a beer with your buddy and say, man, they should have won that game. Instead, they had to sit at home and sit on their couch in their parents' basement with their pizza-stained shirts on, and you write mean things. That's what you do.
Well, he makes a – I read it too, Hayes, and I thought there was one – I just pulled like one little comment by Shanny, which it applies not only to just the Mitch Marner situation, the Leafs situation. It's basically everything in the world, politics, you name it, vaccine, all of that. It's this is the world we live in. You're not getting balanced conversation online. You know, like you're not getting, you know, balanced back and forth. It's just one way or the other. It's explosive. It's angry. It's frustrated, all of that. So he makes a great point when it comes to it because, you know, Mitch, if there were people in the building and he made a mistake, he would hear it. I mean, people let them know. You let their team know that they failed him that night. But people haven't been able to do
that. And on the other side, if he had a great game, he'd be cheered,
give him the
love. Through the roof. And
you
get the love. And they've been playing in front of empty stadiums.
Yeah.
One of seven teams that had to do that throughout the whole run because fans never showed up at any point. I guess the 500 or whatever for game seven. And the Habs had 2,500, you know, throughout their run. But not a packed house like the American teams had.
Agreed.
But it's, you know, he was posed the question, so it's not as if he showed up and said, I want to talk about Mitch Marner, but it's going to be a part of the conversation. And I'm sure the players, you know, teammates are going to talk on it. And I don't think the players would be wise to do the, remember Kessel protecting Phaneuf stuff where Phil went off, and I don't think anyone will do that on the team. I don't think anyone should do that. But they all love Marner on this team, and they understand the importance of Marner. And even anyone that is disappointed with Marner, with the way he performed, which is totally justified in the playoffs, it wasn't good enough. We've had this conversation a million times. We don't have to continue to dig in. It dates back to the contract negotiation and everything that went through with that. But you understand how integral he is. And if they are going to break loose, and actually win in the playoffs, he is going to be a big part of that.
It'll be him and Matthews.
He has to be a huge part of it. Yeah.
It's not going to be Pierre Engvall that delivers.
No,
it's going to be
Marner
Matthews,
that's going to do it.
Marner. That's why people are frustrated. But, like, you got to be careful with that. Like, Mitch Marner, if you're going to win, it's going to be with him. He's going to be the guy. It's going to be Austin Matthews that delivers.
They're also
fascinated. It's not going to be, you know, Mikheyev and Engvall. They could chip in. There's always secondary, we'll call it heroes. You know, Stefan Matteau scored a big goal for the
Unsung
Rangers.
Heroes,
but it was
that.
Messier who delivered for the Rangers back in 94, whatever. That it's going to be Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, John Tavares, you know, Morgan Riley, one of the goaltenders. Like, it's going to be the core that gets them to the promised land if they make it there. And Mitch Marner will be front and center.
And he knows that. And that's a benefit also of being a local guy. You know what comes with the territory when you're on one side of it, but you also know that the other side is available as well. And I think that can actually help him as a local kid and as a local guy.
And people are fascinated, Brian, with the numbers, okay? They're like, Mitch Marner's an unbelievable player. Johnny mentioned it the other day. He was voted first All-Star team right winger.
Right.
In the league.
First time
and
since
fans,
Pavlovich.
That's right. And fans love that. They're like, wow, that's awesome. But they're like, I still can't believe he has to make $11 million a year. How come Braden? And then they just go back to everything, which is their right. They can look at it. They all know the deal. They're like, Braden Point, all of them. Rantanen. They're like, how come this guy had to make more than everybody else? And it's just they're fascinated with that, and they have a difficult time with that. Because I hear it every time I live in Toronto, and I go to the grocery, and that's what I hear.
Well,
it's the marketplace.
It's Toronto, and I think Canadians in general, not to get too heavy, we have a tendency to eat our own. You know, like, don't get too big for your britches. Yeah. We go to the bulk barn, and if you think you are too big for your britches, we eat our own. And I think the idea that Marner, like, it's like you always have to prove, especially if you're a local guy, you have to continue to prove how lucky you feel, right? And how much you appreciate it and how big of an honor it is, more than someone who plays on the team that isn't from here, right? Like, if you're from Toronto, you don't expect, no one believed that Austin Matthews grew up dreaming of being a Maple Leaf because he didn't. He dreamt of playing in the NHL, and it happened to be the Leafs. And now he's here, and by all accounts, he loves being a Leaf, and he's a great Leaf, and it's all good. Mitch Marner, we know, grew up dreaming of being a Maple Leaf, wanting to be a Maple Leaf. He's from Toronto. So if you don't consistently prove you love it so much and you never take it for granted, people will jump on you for it. And that's where it gets back to the contract. That's the genesis of the conversation, I think, more so than the comparisons to other players in the league. It's that you went from love being a Leaf to, okay, now I'm a businessman. Now the deal's done. Love being a Leaf. That's the perception. That's how fans looked at it. You can't be love being a Leaf. Oh, sorry, stop, business. Now love being a Leaf.
I get that.
That's what it is. That's what it always has been. And, again, it's completely irrelevant if you play well and you win. Completely irrelevant. The script will completely flip. Mitch Marner knows that. He's a smart guy. He's from here. He gets the market. That's the way it works. And, you know, Shanahan said something that I find hard to believe and I think will fall on deaf ears. You know, something along the lines of, we've never been more motivated, never been more inspired by what happened last year. They said the same thing the year before, right? And every year we're way more angry this time about that loss. Or we're way more inspired, or we're way more motivated. Literally, it's a carbon copy of the quotes from a year ago and a year before that, and the year before that, right? Like, those are the kind of comments that are to be expected, and I don't dispute that they're motivated and angry or disappointed, frustrated, want to prove themselves, all that
of
kind
above.
Of stuff. Yep. 100%. But they were last year, too, and they were the year before. And, you know, so that's not something that people are going – I think, to appreciate necessarily this year as much as they would have 2 or 3 years ago.
Well, let me ask you this, and it's a question that I think we wrestle with all the time. And, you know, sometimes it gets shot down, but sometimes we bring it up. And what level is it where the pressure of the market, the pressure of Canadian market, let's just say, because it's not just privy to Toronto. It's Vancouver, they're very passionate. Montreal, we know they're very passionate. So let's just say Canadian market. What layer, what percentage factors in to where these guys feel it and it's a negative energy on them. Because we say all the time, you know what?
You guys can speak to it. You've done it. You played Calgary. You played in Toronto. I mean, you guys know the difference.
I understand that. But every time we bring it up when it's a different scenario, it's like, nah, the market, the pressure, it's not that big of a deal. But then in a scenario where we're saying, hey, you know what, like as Canadians, we eat our own sometimes, all of that. Like, that's what stood out for me. You're right. But is there a 5% added pressure if you allow it to get to you? I don't know, because I'm trying to think out loud here. It's just playing for Canadian, you know, we know that the Canadian markets are very passionate and mm-hmm. they respect their players. They love their players. But at what point do the players just go, I'm just going to play and not be swayed by
the market?
Well,
I think that comes down to personality. I do think it also can be different in terms of, here in Toronto, because there are so many local players that will play for the team.
Right.
You know, like Hyman just left. He's not here anymore, but he was one of them. Marner, obviously Spezza, Wayne Simmons, Travis Dermott's from up the street. You know, there are a number of players who are on this team who are from Toronto. I feel like they deal with it a little bit differently. Yet I don't know, like Austin Matthews, I don't think he's had a difficult offseason, or as difficult as maybe as it would be if this was in the States. Because from afar, following the American sports scene for as long as we all have, they go right to the big guy, you know?
Right.
As, like, when Washington was losing, no one was saying Nick Backstrom couldn't get it done. It was Ovi couldn't get it
Ovi
done.
Ovi can't
and
get
Ovi
it done.
Ovi alone can't win the big
Ovi
one.
Ovi alone. And Matthews has not been given that treatment. And Matthews is the Ovechkin of this team. Matthews is the Joe Thornton of the San Jose Sharks, right? Like, the big boys that don't get it done, generally speaking, in the States, you go right to the source. Who's the number one guy? That's the guy who's going to have to take the heat. I don't get the impression like Austin Matthews has had an uncomfortable offseason in terms of people going at him. I haven't picked up on that. I don't think there's a ton. You know, there's pressure on him. He's the best player, and he's the face of the organization. And I expect him to have a good year, but he didn't have a quality game 5, 6, and 7. He was right there with Marner. You know, the two of them really didn't perform well enough. Yet it's Mitch who keeps getting the heat.
Right,
Matthews has not really gotten the heat. And I think, you know, in the States, maybe not every market, but they'd be like, who's the best player? And yeah, Mitch got paid, but Matthews making more. You know, if we're talking about the contract, Matthews making 11.6.
Right. And so you're absolutely right. Like, I just don't know. There's vitriol for Marner, and I don't know if, like, you look at his regular season, it was fantastic. And
phenomenal
he's continued
season.
To grow. Like, and I don't think any of us would be surprised if he got 100-plus points again this year.
I expect it.
He's you expect it
he's
because
elite.
He's a great player.
He's an elite player.
But my when I look at it, though, it's almost like, well, he's a local guy. To your point, Brian, you laid it out, and that you might have – maybe more of the pulse of the thought process of people around here on the outside. It's like, hey, you know, local boy, you should know better. Like, you should know that it comes with the whole package, not mm-hmm. just, you know, a layer of it.
My dad's philosophy, too. You get paid that money. It's not to be called the first string all-star or first all-star or 100 points. You get paid that for wins. Like, that's why you get paid that.
Wow.
That's the bottom line. You're not paid for the individual. It's just like the Ryder Cup nonsense we were talking about. That is for wins. That is to get the Toronto Maple Leafs through the first round, into playoff series, into deep into the playoffs. I don't know what you guys think, but I agree with my old man who says that money, that's for wins.
Ultimately, it is. In when you look back on it, for sure. Like when it's done, if you won.
Nobody's
lost,
talking about this. If they had the run that the Habs did, nobody's talking about anything.
Of course not.
Like, you know, if they went on and lost to Tampa or lost to, you know, somebody else on the West side in the finals, then you're going, what a run. Let's build on that. Like, you know, look who had it. Like, basically what happened is exactly what we've laid out.
Three games over five nights. That was the whole story.
And unfortunately, that's what you have to live with for 10 months again until you go back at it again. And the team will be hungry. The team's going to get some wins. I still think they're in one a little tougher this year just based on the division. But it doesn't mean they can't be right at the top or close to it. It's just they've got to play well. They've got to perform.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, exactly. And we're less than a month away. There was a big announcement today that we knew was coming. The reports have been out before about an outdoor game, a Heritage Classic in Hamilton. And we'll get into that this afternoon as well, playing Buffalo on a Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. puck drop. I'll go to that game for sure.
Let's do it. Let's Night get, in the Hammer before.
Yes.
Ooh.
Night in the Hammer. What's the big street in Hamilton? There's a big region that's like the go-to spot. Can't remember. Been there before.
We'll
Shout out
Somebody
to Hamilton.
Will be there.
Yeah, we'll get up to Ancaster, you know, take the link. I got all the lingo, man. I know Hamilton up and down now.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
I've only been there a few times, but it's gritty, but
gritty
it's
town,
our type
town.
Of town. It's really our type of town.
Yeah, absolutely. Good people, and they love the Leafs. I'm sure there's some Sabre fans there. I think it's going to be a Sabres home game, which I'm sure people in Western New York are going to love.
Oh, God, will they lose it?
They'll complain constantly.
Lose it.
Oh, that's all they did when the Bills came up. How could you take a home game away from it? It's like, okay, like it's our fault.
But it's unfortunate that it's, you know, we'll see where Buffalo's
maybe
at.
Maybe they prefer
like,
it. Honestly, maybe they prefer the break. Just give us 40 home games. If you can give us 20, we'd prefer that. Maybe that's actually the pulse of Buffalo. 10, 15, whatever you need. I'd prefer not to go to games this season. It's going to be ugly. All right, Josh Lewenberg on what Pascal Siakam had to say about getting his contract and the lack of communication about who was the guy in Toronto. That and more coming up later this hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Josh Lewenberg in about 10 minutes, 15 minutes on Pascal Siakam, his interview with the New York Times. We'll play the quote also from Masai. I believe it was last week he was doing an interview with CBC about basically laying the framework for what this season is probably going to turn into.
Which is not good.
It doesn't sound overly optimistic. It doesn't sound as if they are banking on, you know, championship or bust type of mentality. Playoff or bust? Potentially. Championship or bust? Probably not. You know, and they've been planting those seeds for a while. Listen, they tanked last year. They were the seventh worst team in the NBA based on the standings.
Right.
So take that
Still
for what it's worth.
I don't understand why Kyle Lowry wasn't traded.
There's never really been an explanation. I mean, they did the sign and trade, but they got back Dragic, who doesn't want to be here. Although apparently he's changing his tune. I think he's in town now. And he posted something on Instagram about getting all this swag from the team and, hey, thanks for this and let's get after it. So he's trying to change his tune. He's trying to make up for the commentary he had over the summer where he basically said, I have no interest in being here. And that's the truth. What he said in his native tongue, that's the truth. Now it's about PR and spin, and he knows he's got to be here until probably the trade deadline, maybe just before that. But him and Precious Achiuwa, who really struggled last year, really struggled, that's about it. Like it's impossible to believe they could not have got a better deal for Lowry at the trade deadline. And they either overplayed their hand or for whatever reason they thought maybe he was going to come back, if that was going to make sense. But remember Kyle the next day, he was like, almost dejected. He couldn't believe he was still there. And reading the tea leaves on it now, like he had pretty much made up his mind. He wasn't coming back to Toronto. He was going to go somewhere else. And it was probably going to be Miami at that point. He was probably waiting to get traded to Miami at the deadline. And if that wasn't going to happen, he was going to sign in Miami.
Well, think about going down to Florida might do to some of your guys if they're like, obviously, they know about nice places, but when you're kind of driving the Ferrari with the top down, and I don't know, man, it's like a bad deal where guys get to sniff around and check it out through a full season. It's like, oh, maybe this isn't that bad, man.
It's a good point. And like Lowry loves to golf. He loves to tee it up. So if you live in South Florida, you're playing golf year round. You can play every single day. And obviously, that is not doable up here. 5 months a year up in Toronto, you're not playing. And a couple of the other months where you are playing, you might be playing in like 8-degree weather with some wind.
Dude, we both, Jamie, live down there. Hayes, you love going down there. Like to just put the flops on in the morning and there's just, I don't know. You just feel good, man. Everything's green and bright. It's like there's no, you know, the shiver walk to the car when it's like you got to scrape snow and it's like really dark and gloomy. Like, I don't know, man. There's just, you get down there, it's like, how do you not want to be down there?
I'm not an outdoor person, and I enjoyed it. Like, I would go sit on Fort Lauderdale Beach with a little chair and read a book and just hang out with my iPod on or whatever. And just, like, it was awesome. People watch. That's all you do is people
you
watch.
You probably
down
did
the
old man move, and you probably put your chair on like a cement area, not even on the beach with your feet in the sand.
I had a little, like, I had this little setup. It wasn't bad. Like, it wasn't an old man. I was kind of in my early 30s.
You were in your heyday at that point.
Yeah,
you're in your prime.
I was, like, long hair and putting a vibe out a little bit.
Right.
But,
Florida
yeah,
Panther vibe.
Yeah, exactly. That was really.
I'm sure that would land.
Yeah, it had a lot of. It gave me a lot of respect on the beach.
So, is that the lacrosse team or
yeah, exactly.
no, hockey team?
I mean, right there, you guys know the area, right where the elbow room is on the corner
spot.
There. It's a very, very
great
busy spot. And I would just go sit there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon after practice, hang out, read a book, do whatever. Listen
so
to music.
So, it's a totally different lifestyle.
Yeah,
right?
It was so relaxing.
But I wonder if you would. Would lose sight of it, you know, once it becomes a routine for you. Does it become underappreciated?
No,
you know, like
way,
I love
man.
Going down there for a week in March because I'm up here prior to it and I'm coming back to this weather, you know. But if it's every day for you, do you lose sight of that? I don't know.
You can take things for granted.
Take something for granted. Exactly. It's like people that have pools. When you first get the pool, you're in there every day. 2 years later, you're like, I haven't been in that pool in 3 months, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's me. My
so
kids are
lazy, man.
It's
I haven't been
truth,
in my
though.
Pool in 3 years.
I know.
I can't be bothered to clean it. I can't. Whatever.
That's what I have. I know pool owners that are like. I'm in there twice a year. I couldn't be
and
bothered.
Dude, you want to know what Canadians are quick pulling the trigger on is closing down the pool. There's a few on the home stretch at my golf course in Toronto here, Weston. It's like they're closing up the pool. Beautiful weather out.
Yep.
Why are you shutting down the pool already?
Well, that depends on a lot of times it's your provider.
Give it
till
October 15th. Just
it's
shut
your
down
provider.
The pool.
That's
the provider
problem.
For what?
Well, the people that come and shut it down, like they put you into their schedule. You're either early in the schedule or late in the schedule. Like they like we're in your area October 12th. All right, you want it done or you're going to be pushed to
is your shutdown
month?
Right now, Noodles?
No, I mean my kids, I think, are going in it right now. I haven't. I don't go in the pool. We've had a pool. We've been here 3 years.
But
I've
you're
been
not
in
a swimmer,
three
like
times.
Right.
I don't
like,
swim.
But we're talking like people that love to swim and act like looked for a house with a pool, and then like 2 years into home ownership, they're like, I don't even know if we're going to open it this year. Like it's just not worth my time, and I'm over it.
That's not the case around here. There's, you know, I go out sometimes, and I'll peek out the window, and there's Peg Bundy floating around on a flamingo, out there by herself. So you know,
there's nothing wrong with that. Magda just
it's
you know,
all
getting her son
exactly.
in.
Exactly,
getting her son
exactly.
in.
Exactly, it's great.
Making sure it's all good.
Yeah,
you know. All right, so Linda Cohn will join us. She will. She'll join us in about 45 minutes, and she had a sit down with Evander Kane. You mentioned. Kevin Kurtz, who is he with the Athletic out there in San Jose?
He's with the Athletic. Yeah.
And he covers the Sharks, and he saw the interview, and this was Evander Kane sitting down with Linda Cohn. And he just posted this a moment ago. What was newsworthy about the Kane interview isn't what he said, it's what he didn't say. This was a missed opportunity for him to signal to his teammates and organization that he's ready to come back, change his ways, and be a solid teammate. Instead, nothing's changed. So that would speak to what you were talking about earlier, Noodles, that Kevin reporting that, you know, maybe not a good teammate, maybe a guy that the team has turned on, not necessarily because of gambling allegations,
right.
Kind of deja vu to the Winnipeg exit, right? Like the way he left Winnipeg, it got ugly there in Winnipeg for him.
It
very
was.
Ugly.
And
what's concerning for the player is sometimes you sniff around on him and I get two words back, bad guy. That's concerning.
Mm-hmm.
So well, I don't get that often.
If that happens, if you over time you're going to show yourself, you know, you're going to show your true colors. You're going to show what kind of person you are, teammate you are. And the thing is, as he said in the interview, he's like, I have a no trade and no one's approached me on it.
Right.
So what are they going to do? You know, if there is truth to it, that the players, you know, some of his teammates aren't maybe happy with him or whatever. Not to say you can't rectify that. Like it wouldn't be the first time there were teammates that were on icy ground and all of a sudden it's solidified and it's all good. You move on. That obviously could be a possibility for Kane and company, but the cards are, or the chips are in his corner. He's got a big deal, no trade. What's going to happen?
Yeah.
You know,
well,
what are you going to do other than welcome him back into the fold if he's showing up day one of camp?
And I don't want to speak out of turn here because I think there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes. And I would imagine there is probably with these allegations an investigation going on, whether they're true or not.
You know, of course.
The league has to be looking into this going, hold on a second here. Like, you know, if a player who's, I believe he's under, it's a $50 million contract.
It's a monster deal,
like, it's a big deal. You know, if there is some things that went on that were against the standard player contract, like it might head in a different direction too. You know, the Sharks might have to take a different angle with Evander Kane and his contract. So I think there's a lot of moving parts that we have to kind of wait until the dust settles on it. And to be fair, it sounds like, you know, he said there it's his wife, but estranged, their soon to be ex-wife. Like, these are allegations. So you have
to give people the benefit
of the doubt on both sides, correct?
Not the first time you would have, you know, a marriage or a relationship that's on the rocks and something gets thrown out that, you know, isn't true or what have you. So that obviously is why the NHL has to vet it. And Kane is saying adamantly that it's not true, didn't happen, hasn't happened. And I'm not sure how you find out if it did happen or not unless you can find the receipts. Like, unless you can find the smoking gun. Because even reviewing the game tape, which they might be doing, you know, a winger in a game, can you factor in on throwing a game, quote-unquote, to an extent? Like, maybe dumb penalty?
Possible for one guy. Like, yeah, dumb penalty after dumb penalty, but still, it's not a
even that,
a game.
Right? And if it was so blatant, it would, like, intentionally missing the net or missing a pass or intentionally giving away a bad turnover. But if it was so blatant, you'd be like, what the hell was that? Like,
I think minimum you'd have to have two line mates in on it and playing against the other team's top line to be able to pull it off.
Or a goalie. Like a goalie could do it. Late goal, slid past me all of a sudden, you know, whoops, there's the over or whatever.
Exactly.
Like that, the goaltender, it's possible. You know, that's what happens in soccer a lot of times. The fix is in because the goalie's like, go ahead and fire that one past me. But
make it look good. That's
right. As for an individual player in a team game moving this fast where he's only playing a certain amount of minutes, I think it would be tough to figure that out by watching the game. I think it'd be very difficult to do. All right, Josh Lumenberg coming up. Luke Wilson coming up in about 25 minutes as well. We'll have my pick for the game tonight, Washington football team at home against the New York Giants. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, week two NFL. Luke Wilson will join us in 20 minutes. Tee up week two, tee up the game tonight. I will be on the clock at 6 o'clock. Picking a game, Washington at home, laying 3.5 against the Giants. Al's brother will be a part of that conversation. Victorious last night, big win. Big win with the Dodgers over the D-backs. No one saw that coming. I love it.
Who's the guy? Is it Miguel?
Miguel. It was going to be Al's brother with a wig on and a mustache.
That's what we figured, Anyway, Miguel's hombre, and that's not happening. So. We'll get to that into the next hour. But here is our Raptors reporter, Josh Lumenberg. What's happening, Josh?
Not much, Brian. How you guys doing?
Doing pretty well. We've been referencing this Pascal Siakam article in the New York Times throughout the afternoon. And there's one point of it that's really sticking out. This I guess, claim from Pascal that there was no communication after he signed his max contract from anyone within the front office, I guess more pointedly Masai Ujiri, telling him that he is, quote-unquote, the guy, was the guy that was going to bring them back to championship status. And he took issue with that, and he's still taking issue with that. I take issue with that because the max contract is telling you all you really need to know. What else was there to interpret here? Like, what else was Pascal supposed to take or receive in terms of a message when he got that max contract?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not sure how much communication is necessary. The number of zeros on that check should be all you need to know in terms of where you stand in the hierarchy. He's the highest paid player on the team for a reason. I just think even more naturally than the fact that he's getting a max contract, and that's usually what it means when you get a max contract in the NBA. I mean, I know a lot of guys get the max. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're the superstar, you're the franchise player. Sometimes a number two gets the max deal as well. But I just think naturally here, when you look at the timing of when Pascal signed that max extension, Kawhi had just left. It was very clearly a passing of the torch. Kyle Lowry was still very much the face of this team from a legacy standpoint more than anything else. And I think that transition is going to happen more this year with Fred VanVleet, with Pascal Siakam now that Kyle's gone. But Pascal, at that point, he had been the second offensive option on a championship team. And guess what? The first offensive option, Kawhi, wasn't there anymore. So, yeah, I mean, I think clearly that's what the Raptors were expecting from him. But I also think if we're talking communication, actually putting those words out there and getting that out there into the open and saying, okay, this is what we expect from you. I mean, listen, the Raptors were pretty clear about that, too. They were clear with that with us, right? Like, Nick Nurse talked a lot about that over the last couple of years, and Masai did as well in terms of Pascal is the guy. We would always ask after every game where Pascal Siakam would take the last shot of the game last year. And in a lot of cases, that didn't work out well. And I don't put that entirely on Pascal because some of that was coaching, some of that was play calling, some of it was just bad luck and Siakam getting a good look and it would rim out. But after those games, we would always ask, okay, well, what's the plan here? Clearly, this is in Siakam's head a little bit, right? When things aren't working out at the end of a game, do you stick with him? And what did they say? Every time Nick Nurse would say, Pascal is our guy. So I don't agree with that at all. I think I agree with a lot of what was in that interview in terms of the frustration level Pascal has with some of the personal insults that he's getting on social media. I completely agree with that. That stuff's uncalled for. I like a lot of the things that he had to say in terms of just how tough this last year has been for him. I'm sensitive to that. I appreciate that. But yeah, like you guys, I don't agree with that in terms of the communication. I think it was pretty clear on a lot of levels what the Raptors expect from Pascal Siakam.
First of all, if you need to be told you're the guy, you're given the ball in those opportunities, and when you continue to succeed, you become the guy. And when you fail, you become not the guy. Josh, I'd just like to understand the dynamic. Like, does Masai read this, and is there a phone call placed immediately reading this nonsense? Because I actually think it's completely ridiculous, these comments, that he thought someone would go up to him and tell him that he was the guy. It just seems absurd to me. Where do you think Masai would stand reading this nonsense?
Yeah, I think he's probably now communicating that same thing as clear as ever, probably giving him a call, texting him saying like, hey, you're our guy. We've told you you're our guy. And I agree with you. Like, I mean, he's got to wear it whether he fails or succeeds, right? Because you're obviously the guy when things are going well. And this is where things, I think, were tricky this year, and things maybe were tougher for Siakam than they've ever been before. Because all of a sudden, for the first time in his professional career and for the first time as a franchise for the Raptors for a long time, things weren't going well. And that's when you need to be the guy as much or more than when things are going well. And I think that's where Siakam took a step back this past season. His season overall as a whole wasn't even as bad as a lot of people think. I think if you look at the numbers, the overall production, like, yeah, the shooting was down, the shooting numbers were down. His numbers were fine. I think on a game-to-game basis, that was the problem. He was inconsistent. But then overall, like, I think a lot of people look back at it and are more negative towards the season than they should be because of the off-court stuff. We remember the altercation with Nick Nurse after that game against Houston. We remember the benching against the Knicks on New Year's Eve. Those are the situations where Siakam's got to be better at managing his frustration level, at being a leader off the court. And a lot of those things come from, okay, well, we know how he reacts in situations where there is success. He's won a championship. The Raptors, Siakam was a big part of winning them that championship. But how do you lead? How do you act in that role as the guy when things aren't going well and they're not always going to go well? I think that's going to be the big test for him going forward here. He has more obstacles to overcome. I mean, just physically in terms of getting back on the floor, recovering from that shoulder surgery and not having a full off season here is really going to hurt him here. But I also think in addition to the tangible things and getting better on the court, getting more consistent with the shot and getting better late in games, in addition to all that stuff as a basketball player, he needs to do a better job of managing his emotions and being a leader if he is going to be in that number one role.
Well, we're a couple weeks away from camp. Like you said, Siakam, he's going to be injured. He's going to be out for a while anyway. So it's going to be an interesting season for him. All eyes are going to be on him. He'll be back in town. The fans should be back in the building. That should help. But these comments, they'll be following him to camp, and he'll be answering on them. Great stuff, Josh. Thank you for doing this. We'll do it again soon.
All right, guys. Talk soon.
Josh Leuenberger, Raptors reporter.
Is he the guy, though?
Well, he wasn't when Kyle was here. You know,
That's
and he does
I mean,
say that. Like, he's like, well, Kyle was here and Kyle was the guy. It's like, okay, then why would you expect them to come to you and say you're the guy if Kyle's the guy?
Flat out question.
I'd call him and say, we don't want you to be any kind of guy around here. Go play somewhere else. I just
Well, he's got a
loser's
ton of
race comment.
It's a weird it's a comment that is reaching for it feels like it's like he's trying to explain why it's gone bad for him.
That's
you know,
right.
Like he's trying to come up with reasonings. But to your point, oh, like the end of the game, they gave him the ball a lot to close out a game. That
couldn't
means you're the guy.
Right.
That's you're the guy. If they're drawing up plays for you, you're the guy.
Yeah, and when they stop doing it, it's because you're not making the shot.
Right. So
yeah, that's fair.
You know, he's all eyes are going to be on Pascal this year. That's for sure. We will get to the Masai clip as well from CBC last week about projecting for the season, and it was not overly optimistic. We'll let you hear it. We'll get into it. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.